committee will come to order. We will start with calling of the roll.
Senators Holmberg.
Here.
Cook.
Here.
Heckman.
Here.
Belkey.
Here.
Robinson. Schneider. Zorvog.
Here.
Woodner.
He's
representatives.
Coming.
Carlson.
Here.
Feldman.
Here.
Rudersberg. Heller.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Armstead. Schmidt.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay, the next item is consideration of the minutes of our June 10th, 2013 meeting.
Move approval.
We have a motion to approve by Carlson, seconded by Schmidt. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay. The next item on the agenda says comments by the chairman. And even though we have three members absent, I will give my comments and they're just going to miss them. Legislative management is meeting today for a unique purpose, to fulfill our statutory responsibilities to coordinate the determination of the estimated fiscal impact of initiated measures. The duty was required by the 2005 legislature in the enactment of North Dakota Century Code 16.10117, which requires the legislative management to hold hearings, receive public testimony, and gather information on the estimated fiscal impact of initiated measures. The law resulted from passage by the citizens of North Dakota of an amendment to the state constitution in 2004, which permits the legislative assembly to provide by law a procedure through which legislative management may establish an appropriate method for determining the fiscal impact of an initiated measure and for making the information regarding the fiscal impact available to the public. The Secretary of State has notified us that he has determined four initiated measures qualify for the general election ballot: an initiated constitutional amendment to create a Clean Water, Wildlife, and Parks and Trust and Fund, measure number 5, and three initiated statutory measures relating to equal parenting rights and responsibilities, measure number 6, relating to pharmacy operations, measure number 7, and relating to classes to begin after Labor Day, measure number 8. We are following basically the same policies as followed in previous years and during the legislative session to obtain fiscal notes. Those state agencies determined to either have the best information on the impact of a measure or the primary responsibility for compiling and maintaining the information that is needed have been invited to present their findings at this meeting. It should be noted that our only purpose for holding this meeting is to meet our statutory responsibility to obtain fiscal note information on each measure, and we are not here to hear testimony on the merits of the measures. We will hear information on the ballot measures in the order of their placement on the ballot. In other words, we are not to hear testimony on whether we should vote for measure whatever or against it. It is just what is the fiscal impact. The duty of notifying the voters is not up to the legislature. It is up to the initiating committees and also to people who might oppose whatever that particular initiated measure might be. That is not our job here today. At the conclusion of testimony and discussion, I will entertain a motion regarding the fiscal notes presented on the initiated measures and to direct the Legislative Council staff to forward the information to the Secretary of State as provided in law. We will take each item in the order in which they are on the ballot. We will hear the fiscal note from the appropriate state agency. We will hear if there is anyone in the audience who wants to talk about that particular fiscal note and just the note itself, not the issue. And then we will have a motion, a couple motions. And that's how it will work. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, but I think that this information that we approve
goes on the Secretary of State's website, it does not go on the ballot anywhere?
No.
But you can relate that information back to his website to get that, as, if you want to be informed as a voter?
Right. Anything we do is not part of the ballot. That is already set.
But there is a place for the public to get this information that we view as a fiscal notes, correct?
That's my understanding.
That's right.
The committee members received a number of pieces of paper. One of them is all of the measures, the eight measures. And again, the first four are legislative pronouncements, so they are already on the ballot, and we presumably have already looked at what fiscal impact there may or may not be. But these are the initiated measures. So we're going to start with initiated measure number five, initiated constitutional measure number five. And Sheila is going to make the presentation today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Legislative Management Committee. Measure number five, as you know, is an initiated constitutional measure that relates to the Clean Water, Wildlife, and Parks Trust and Fund. It is based on 5% of the extraction tax, and Office of Management and Budget and the Tax Department and our Revenue Advisory Committee did complete the revenue forecast for the remainder of this biennium, an update to that, as well as the initial forecast for the upcoming 15-17 biennium. And based on the production and price per barrel of oil, we have calculated what the percent would be for this particular measure. The measure starts, it's actually effective in this biennium yet, it's effective January 1st of 2015. So for the last 6 months of the biennium we're in now, the estimate is $49 million. And then for the 2 years of the new biennium, the forecast is $259 million. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report, unless you have any questions.
Are there any questions of Sheila? Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to make a comment regarding the fiscal impact of this particular measure? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move forward this recommendation on.
Okay, the motion is to forward the...
Just accept the statement.
To accept the statement.
Yep. That's my motion.
Okay, is there a second?
Sure.
Okay. Discussion? It was a voice in the audience. Sorvald. You did? Oh, Cook did. Okay, give it to Cook. We will prove to Mandan that he was here. Yes, Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a question. Do you want to take a vote on this first? I have a question not related to this.
Not related to this?
Yeah.
Let's take a vote on this. Okay, would you call the roll, please, on the motion to forward, to accept, this statement from OMB?
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Heckman.
Aye.
Elke.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Sorvald.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Heller.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Onstead.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion carried. Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of on all of these measures, what is the effective date on all of them?
It's within each one.
So, like, I'm looking at number four. If number four passes, does that have an effect on number five? That was a question a constituent asked me.
our legal people.
If Measure Four passes, would it affect any of the other measures? Is that the question?
They just asked me specifically Five because it was right below and it had money in it. They knew that, so. And I didn't have an answer for them because I don't know what comes first.
Yeah, Measure Four would not affect any of the measures that are on the ballot with it. It would affect any measures in the future.
So what's the effective date of that? Is it July 1 then? That's what they wanted to know. What's the effective date of number four if it passes? Or number three, or number two, or number one, or whatever? Do they all have different dates?
They might, and if they have none, then they are effective 30 days after the election.
Well, then if number four passes, it would certainly have an effect on number five if it doesn't, number five doesn't take effect till January 1st.
I don't agree.
You just said number four could be effective 30 days after the election. That would be December 4th.
Okay.
And if that takes effect January 4th, but number five doesn't take effect till December 4th, January 1 is the effective date of number five.
Oh, but all you have to do is look at what the language is. Any petition will prohibit the circulation of a petition, which can't happen until 2016.
Okay.
That's a good question, though, because yeah. Somebody wants to supersede it.
Yeah, people will ask. Okay, the next item on our agenda, Sheila Sandness is, oh, I guess not. Oh, I see, okay. Okay, Sheila.
Mr. Chairman, the second one is measure number six that relates to parental rights and responsibilities, and OMB has determined that this measure does not have a fiscal impact at all.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Sheila. Is there anyone who wants to provide us some information on this fiscal note, on the shared parenting? We did receive a packet from a sponsor of the measure. Saying he disagreed, there is no cost, and there is no cost. He was afraid that there would be a huge fiscal note put together by OMB, but there is no fiscal impact, so. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, maybe just for my own edification, if somebody could explain technically how these fiscal notes are put together. I mean, my understanding is this could, at least according to some people, lead to additional litigation, increased workloads for our judges. You know, according to some, I know we're not debating the merits of this measure, but is that taken into account, or is it just not taken into account because it's unquantifiable?
See, you guys worked with Department of Human Services, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The Department of Human Services Child Support Enforcement Program is who we worked with on this particular fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick
yes.
question, if you don't mind. Was there any outreach by the Department of Human Services to the judiciary branch or anything like that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I can't tell you that. I do believe Jim Fleming may be here.
Okay.
Maggie said no.
Okay.
Okay, is there any motion on this measure?
Anybody from the public, did you ask for that?
I did, and no one came up.
Then we're done.
Anyone make a motion on it to accept this report?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Wardner.
I so move.
Here we have a motion to accept the report. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Carlson. Discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Heckman.
Aye.
Elke.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Heller.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Armstead.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion carried. The next item is on the pharmacy operation initiated statutory measure number seven. Sheila.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are estimating, again, having worked with the Department of Human Services Medicaid program, that there may be a small savings to the Medicaid program for the upcoming biennium of $82,961, of which half of that would be federal funds and half of it would be general funds, since we have a 50-50 sharing in our Medicaid program. And we assume that there would be some Medicaid recipients who would switch their prescriptions to a now eligible pharmacy that wasn't there before. And we assume that the local independent pharmacies, where they may have currently been filling their prescriptions, don't lower their prices. And we assume that the newly eligible pharmacies would not change the list of drugs that are provided at $4. So those are our assumptions. And we looked mainly at the state of South Dakota, who has never had a restriction like this, and what the penetration of the market is for the Walmarts of the world, and based our numbers and percentages of clients that may move their prescriptions to a different pharmacy. However, I do want to point out that there is no incentive for a Medicaid client to move what pharmacy they're using, because the cost sharing to the client is the same. It's not going to change from their current pharmacy to another one. So I just wanted to point that out as well. We are just estimating there may be some movement with 82,000, almost 83,000 split between the federal and state liability for the 15-17 biennium.
Are there any questions on Sheila on initiated statutory measure number seven? Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheila, you said local pharmacies lowering their prices, and doesn't Medicaid use a PBM to set the prices that the local pharmacies receive?
Brendan, do you want to answer that? Brendan Joyce is the pharmacist with the Medicaid program, so let me have him answer that question, if that's all right.
Yes.
Chairman Holmberg, Representative Nelson, members of the committee, I'm Brendan Joyce, the pharmacy administrator for Medicaid. We actually don't employ a PBM. We determine, as the department, the payment rates, and we have a payment rate for all pharmacies, regardless of where they are, but part of the payment rate includes a lesser of calculation. So if the pharmacies bill at a lower dollar amount than what our allowed amount is, then we pay that lower amount. So that's why you would see the savings of the $80,000+ is because the $4 billed amount is actually less than what our paid amount would have been for that drug as we did the calculations for determining the estimate.
Yes, continue, please.
Thank you. Then I was wondering, like, the whole interplay between brand name and generics. How are the Medicaid patients as far as, are they free to use name brand, or how does that work?
Chairman Holmberg, Representative Nelson, the name brands, generics, it's determined by the physician. The physician is the one that determines what they want, and they may require prior authorization to get a brand instead of a generic if a generic is available for that brand. But the only payment piece that comes into play for the patient as they're getting the medications, there's a $3 copay for brand name medications. and brand-name medications have an average cost of $300+ per prescription, and there is no co-payment for generic medications, and the average payment for generic medications as a whole globally for all generics is $28. So that's why the difference, $3 for brand, zero for generic.
Continue.
Then how does North Dakota's Medicaid usage of percentages of name brand and Medicaid compared to other states?
Senator Homer, Representative Nelson, we are extremely favorable when compared to other states. We're at 86% generic utilization. And also for the number of, that's the general split, brand name versus generic. But then if there are brand name medications that have a generic, we're at 99 point something for people using the generics instead of the brand.
And other states are not similar?
Other states vary based on Medicaid supplemental rebates. Some states can get supplemental rebates. We are one of the three that cannot get supplemental rebates from manufacturers. So they will prefer brand name because they get a bigger rebate, so the net cost ends up coming less than the generics. So that comes into play for the 86%, 14% brand generic split. For some states, you know, it's, you see one Medicaid program, you've seen one Medicaid program, they're not always necessarily apples to apples.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there any other question first of Sheila? If not, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to make comments on the fiscal impact of measure number 7? Then I would entertain a motion. Senator Elke moves. Do we have a second? Senator Sorvag moves. A second. Discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Heckman.
Yes.
Elke.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Heller. Nelson?
No.
Onstead?
Yes.
Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
And our final item today is initiated measure number 8, having to do with the start of school. And we have Jerry Coleman here to give us information.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this measure requires school classes to begin after Labor Day. The schools are required to have at least a calendar, a school calendar of 182 days, and 175 of those days must be student contact days. The measure does not change that requirement, and based on that, we don't believe there is an estimated fiscal impact to this note, or to the measure.
Okay, the report says no fiscal impact. Are there any questions of committee members? Thank you, Jerry. Is there anyone from the public that would like to make a comment on initiated statutory measure number 8? Okay.
I would move to accept the report.
We have a motion from Senator Robinson to accept this report. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Schneider. Discussion? Okay, would you call the roll then on the passing this measure?
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Heckman.
Yes.
Elke.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Heller.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Onstead.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion carried. The next item is we need someone to make a motion to forward the fiscal impact statements provided on measures 5, 6, 7, and 8 to the Secretary of State as provided by Section 16.10117. So moved by Carlson, seconded by Heckman. Would you call the roll?
Senators Holmberg.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Heckman.
Yes.
Elke.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Devlin.
Yes.
Heller?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Armstead?
Yes.
Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, motion carries.
Motion carried. That is the end of our agenda. Is there anything else that needs to come before this group today? Remember, the next meeting is scheduled for November 12 and 13, where we will receive the reports from all of the interim committees. Senator Cook?
Just to have a question. Who determines what chamber agency bills get introduced in?
Agency bills?
And when is that decision made?
If you're talking about the budget bills, they flip-flop.
Mm-hmm.
Last time, the Senate had Commerce, the first half, the second half, the House had it. This
other
time,
bills.
It flip-flops.
Other bills.
Oh, other bills.
Other than budget bills.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cook, I work with the leaders of the House and Senate, as well as the new elected Speaker, and what we try to do is get a balance between the Houses and committees as well, to get an even workload to start.
And when is that done?
Pre-filed bills are due by December 1. I think agency bills are due December 1. Or, yeah, maybe it's that Friday, the first Friday of that week. Probably the 5th. Yeah, I think it's the 5th of December. So it's done between then and January 6th.
So I have 10 interim committee bills. I need to go through the same process. I'd like to be able to be in sync with some of the agency bills that are coming.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cook, that's where we work with the staff that are assigned to the interim committee and go along with what the chairman would like to do. Sometimes we split those so they're not all in one house,
but
we'll work with you on that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
But where do you put it?
Yeah, I think you said interim.
You wouldn't have a problem if I
knew. Okay, is there anything else? If not, a motion to adjourn by Cook, seconded by Robinson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. We're adjourned.
But we had our last. You talked about the opposition.